payments and savings, the more fees are taken. Every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Monday at 5:05 p.m., the second half of the Financial Power Block here on WWPR. It starts at 4:05 with Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew, and followed up right here with the Henry Rain Show, which is your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, news, talk, and more. This week, the backed Bitcoin futures market.
Back to the future.
Back
to the futures.
Back to the Bitcoin future.
That's right.
And Bitcoin back futures.
Back, that's right. I'm liking it. I'm liking
Bitcoin's
it.
Bitcoin's got back.
I don't understand why Bitcoin's not higher. I mean, this is really good stuff here.
Oh, it's going to get better. Has begun accepting Bitcoin deposits. When I get to the second half of the sentence, began accepting Bitcoin deposits and withdrawals. The VanEck Security Corp and SolidX Management Bitcoin ETF, you know, the one you've been waiting for months and months and months, and the SEC keeps putting you off, putting you off, putting you off.
They said screw the
SEC.
It's
finally here. Sort of. Fed Chair Jerome Powell makes bearish comments on digital currency. And the cryptocurrency insurance market is expected to grow at a faster rate than the cybersecurity insurance market. Now, I put that in as the fourth top story today, but really we have something much more topish than that, and that would be audio from SEC Chair Jay Clayton that is bullish in opposition to Jerome Kerr's. Jerome Kern. Jerome Kern's musicals are just bearish. And we're just boorish here. So we're going to keep playing that until you respond reflexively to the sound of the Talking Markets theme show. not you as the host responsor. You should actually respond reflexively too. You should be like, "On, hey, it's Talking Markets.
It's a Talking Markets show."
Yes.
I'm Morgan Andrew, and
spinning the
Henry is spinning the wheel.
Yes. All right. Well, but it's Andy.
Hey,
Andrew on Talking Markets. He drops a few letters. Gets
informed. My name gets shorter as we go on.
Yeah. Just by the end of the hour, I just sort of glance at him.
I remember back in the day, if they called your full name, Andrew T. Gonsi, you knew you were in trouble with the nuns. That's all I have to say. You were going to the principal's office. Especially when it came over the loudspeaker. Sister Mary Cheryl was very,
You know, I started this show telling you before we started, we're going to stay focused because I got everything ready to go.
I'm going on Sister Mary Cheryl.
No, now you spun me off. Because the church I go to does a daily podcast, but it's not really about the church per se. It's just talking to people in the church organization or the community and just about their lives and stuff. And it just turns out that the pastor's wife is being the host of the podcast is actually the daughter-in-law of the pastor. And so she was interviewing her mother-in-law, actually, about a week ago. And turns out that the mother-in-law, the pastor's wife, grew up right out on Longboat Key. And the dad also owned some property right there on Cortez Village, which, for those of you all around the world, are going, so what? But it is geographically close to us here. And it also turns out that she was in the same class of high school as I was. So she started to tell this story back in the day, that this would be the mid-70s, the high school didn't have any perimeter security. We really weren't worried about the only shotguns they were worried about at our school was what was going on in South Campus behind the lunchroom. So
I think we're able to go to school with a truck and a shotgun in your truck.
Yeah. Just to give you that reference. So anyway, she's talking about, and also a senior year, like I took advantage of, if you had all your credits, you only had to go a half day and you got to leave at lunchtime and be done for the day. And so, but when I was a junior, I had a friend that was a senior who did that, and he'd always come pick me up and would leave for lunch, which you weren't supposed to do. Well, it turns out she's telling a similar story, except she got caught. And she talks about having to go to the principal's office or assistant principal's office And they get rid of, well, you're either going to be suspended for 3 days for going off campus, or you're going to get, or you can have three licks. Now, her daughter-in-law is looking at this, you know, first, she, it really hasn't registered.
I remember those choices he had to make. It was a pretty simple choice, though.
And she goes, well, I didn't want to lose my grades, so I said I'd take the three licks. And the daughter-in-law is like, what?
the kids
goes,
today,
He goes, well, he got his paddle out. And she's like, she was like, I don't really remember what his name was. And then, so she and her friends, they just got paddled with this wooden paddle that would be like a, you know, about 2.5 feet long usually is the ones I remember there.
Oh, yeah.
And,
did they have holes drilled in them?
You know, there were more than one
paddler.
Yeah,
I was going to say, the gym teacher, he had
holes
in his.
The dean of boys, the dean of girls.
Yes.
But at this particular time, I guess the only available paddler was a male administrator at the campus. And the eyes of the daughter-in-law got bigger and bigger as she realized that her mother-in-law is talking about how you would go to an administrator's office and the adult male would make the teenage girl bend over and strike her with a wooden paddle, which sounds like a ping pong paddle. No, it was about 4 inches wide, about an inch thick, and about 2.5, and then they would, you know, some of them had them decorated and stuff. No, there wasn't any sadomasochistic male administrators.
Well, you know, they used to do it right in the hall at our school. And I remember when I was an English, I can't remember her name, but an English teacher. And she, you know, and this, I forgot my pencil. And this is what you get paddled for. I forgot my pencil again.
Well, this is the Catholic school, right?
Yes, and she goes, you know.
It didn't reach that level in the public school.
Yeah, so, actually, no, I'm sorry. This was a public school, Springfield Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she goes, Mr. Gossi, it's the last time I told you not to, you know, forget your pencils in that. Take me outside in the hall. And, you know, of course, they leave the door open. Everybody can hear. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the classroom can hear. And she goes, whack. And, of course, you can hear the whack. And she goes, you know, is that enough, Mr. Gossi? And I said, no, I'll take another. And she goes, whack again. And, of course, you could hear, you know, everybody's in the class. I got to be the big guy. You know, I just, give me another. I kid you, she hit me about 5 times. And then she goes, would you like another? And I said, yes. And I can't think of her name. This is not Cheryl. Anyways, she goes, let me go get Mr. Whitehead. I remember Mr. Whitehead's name. He was about 6'6", math teacher. And I was like, ugh, and you could hear everybody in the classroom laughing at me. That was one whack. And then she goes, would you like another? And I'm like, no.
Okay, so
but back to the, you know,
the weekly roundup of Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrency news. We got that for you.
I tell you, I've got news for you.
Story.
As Mr. Whitehead told Andy all those years ago.
He threw one of those clipboards at me one time. Just about hit me in the head with it.
Back in the civilized days of education, whatever went wrong. Okay. In today's news, all Bitcoin deposited at the backed warehouse is protected by a $125 million insurance policy, the company announced September 9th. This is after they announced they started accepting deposits and withdrawals September 6th, as in last Friday, ahead of the proposed launch of its products on September 23rd. You would think they would want to say they had the insurance before they started accepting
it. Yeah, I mean, they probably, you know,
had to get it to pay for
to
it.
To see how much they were going to get in, and they do some estimates. But that's a lot of money. I mean, because over the weekend when they started accepting it on Friday.
Yeah.
So $129 million insurance policies, you're probably at least $100 million.
I think the CME, which doesn't do the Bitcoin settled futures, which we'll talk about that in a second, is running like $300 million a day or something like that, isn't it?
It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't. That does not necessarily mean there's going to be 300 million of Bitcoin deposited. I actually think there's going to be more than 300 million.
I think
million,
so too. Yeah.
Bitcoin deposited.
I think it'll be a lot easier to trade there, and the fees will probably be less.
Well, as we sort of get around there, but we've talked about it so many other times. This is the first Bitcoin settled futures, and as opposed to the CME, which is just cash settled, so you're really just betting on a number mm-hmm. on those. This, you actually have to invest actual effort and material, as in having Bitcoin and putting it in custody and basically buying your way to the table.
Yeah, it's like getting into poker, yeah.
And so I would think they probably would get at least $1 billion of deposit.
Oh, I imagine probably in a month or so it'll be over that.
Because at $300 million a day, I mean, that's just ledgers, but...
You know, you're talking institutions, so you know, you're not talking people that are throwing around 10, 15,000. You're talking, you know, people that are throwing around 10, 15 million. So,
right.
That's
So that all happened starting on Friday. It was scheduled to happen, and then it actually happened, and we got a spike there in Bitcoin in anticipation of the launch of the custody of it all, and then Jerome Powell actually said some negative things. So we got a nice move on Bitcoin. I think it got up to, what, about 10.8 or something, right around there, touched it for a moment. And then almost simultaneously with a speech, because everybody always looks for a reason with Bitcoin price, and sometimes there isn't a reason, but sometimes there's a lot of coincidences.
Yes.
And Jerome Powell was talking about digital currency and Libra and stuff and wasn't very positive about it, and we'll play that for you in just a minute. And so the price came back down. But basically, we've been up. We've been down. We're almost right back where we started last Monday,
gone
which was
nowhere.
Almost where we were the Monday before we went up and down.
It's absolutely
gone
nowhere.
So for your SeekingCryptos.com clients, which go to SeekingCryptos.com, and you can see how you can take advantage of the trade ideas that Mark and Andrew, the co-founders, have there. You can do that. But basically, you're saying that Bitcoin's been just in this big consolidation range.
It is, and as long as the as Mark pointed out, the 9750 is an important level. So as long as it remains above that, we still remain bullish. I like the consolidation, the type of consolidation that's at the upper end of the previous rally. So it's really going nowhere. We mentioned going way back to July that this is probably going to be a broad consolidation, horizontal, and it's been playing that way out. So what we're telling people is, we're not selling here, you know. If it pushes down into the low nines, I'm a buyer. Of course, I bought in the low nines, did not trim out here, so it really needs to get into the 8,500s. I'm not sure we get there. I think this market's setting up for a nice swing higher. If it takes a week or so to play out, it will.
Well, the backed Bitcoin settled futures has been one of those things that have been put out there as like a big milestone that's going to move and be a real bullish sign, and more or less, it seems to be that way, although not the get-us-all-rich overnight way that we want it to be, but most of us want it to be. But the other thing that we've been talking about for years at this point is a Bitcoin ETF. Right now, the only thing is the Grayscale Bitcoin Investment Trust, which trades on the over-the-counter funds. In markets in the United States, it trades at a premium to the actual price of Bitcoin, but it has been, for people that want the security of dealing with what are we going to call this, a broker? It's not a brokerage.
You just want that security to be in you do it out of your own brokerage.
Right. Dealing it in your brokerage
Within
account.
In your brokerage account.
Or your IRA, your 401k. And investment management firms, VanEck Securities and SolidX Management, have been the one that seem to have the most inside edge. The final decision on that is coming up in October, late October. SEC has to rule one way or the other. There's a couple other secondary ETFs there that also have a good presentation, but none as good as the standing of VanEck Securities and SolidX Management with their solutions. But if you are a special person...
Yeah.
Not a person.
No,
Not a person with special challenges. We're talking a person that's really special.
Yes. You a special account.
You can buy a limited version of the Bitcoin Exchange Traded Fund for institutional investors. Last Thursday it was available. So for everyday people, for the little people, wait till October.
Yeah, wait till it's at 20,000. That's when they'll release the ETF.
But really, if you haven't bought Bitcoin on your own by now, this is for the people that aren't listening to the show when come October, and you can buy it in your brokerage account.
Well, you know what? It's going to be so easy, too. You know, if you go on TD Ameritrade, I buy some for my grandkids. And you start getting that kind of mentality, and you start getting that kind of surge because it's in a place where you feel safe. Not Coinbase, because a lot of people don't like me. I've had a lot of friends that say, well, you know, I'd like to buy some, but, you know, I hear everybody's getting hacked. You know, it's like, no, it's not like that. But that's keeping the mainstream out of this, or at least the main retail investor.
And we'll actually play something from Jerome Powell that makes you wonder if he ever read the briefing reports that his staff has made for him. Anyway, the Wall Street Journal reported the news last Tuesday saying the unusual arrangement, that's in quotes, unusual arrangement is under U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's Rule 144A. You're familiar with that. You're always investing in that stuff, which allows sale of privately placed securities to, quote, qualified institutional buyers. The SEC has delayed the decision, as we said, until October. With the issuance under the rule, it would be available only to institutions such as hedge funds, brokers and banks, and not to retail or individual investors. They hope that the limited version will act as proof that a Bitcoin ETF can work. And I actually agree that it is a good sign for the October decision that they're letting this go forward, even though it isn't that big a step to allow hedge funds to buy because they're already doing a lot already. And we have some really almost breaking news because this is an interview just today from SEC Chair Jay Clayton. Now, every other time that he's been on CNBC and Bob Pisani over the years have asked him, you know, what's going on with the Bitcoin ETF? He goes, on the one hand and then on the other hand, and then, you know, and there's this stuff, and there's things that can happen, and we're very cautious, and we're here to protect the investor.
Yeah.
This is a lot more to the point this time around, and again, this was just, I don't know, maybe 4 hours ago when this broke.
Let me ask you about Bitcoin. I know I've asked you many times about this in the last couple of years, but it's of intense interest to the viewers. Are we any further along on a Bitcoin ETF? I know you did a memo, you and your staff, a year and a half ago, where you made it very clear you were concerned about custody and the security of custody, and you were very concerned about the fact that much of the pricing of Bitcoin was done on foreign exchanges that had the potential to be easily manipulated. Now, your realm here is a Bitcoin ETF. Are we any closer? Have the people involved in the Bitcoin businesses...
I'll let you just play the drum roll in your mind right now, because here it comes, or on the desk, and with the vibrating microphone,
yes.
All the special sound effects. So, SEC Chair Jay Clayton, what do you have to say?
In any way come closer to satisfying your concerns?
The short answer is yes, but there's work left to be done. Those were not trivial questions. How do we know that we can custody and have a hold of these crypto assets? That's a key question. An even harder question, given that they trade on largely unregulated exchanges, is how can we be sure that those prices aren't subject to significant manipulation? Now, progress is being made, but people needed to answer those hard questions for us to be comfortable that this was the appropriate type of product.
Let me,
Well, still, that was a big stretch.
Yeah, I think it's a big kind of lie. They still talk about this manipulation stuff. And
Have you been satisfied? The short answer is yes.
Yes.
But, and then he talks about custody. Custody is being solved as we speak. We have the backed futures.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Van Eck Solidex ETF is a custody issue, too. They've been solved, and they've been given the go-ahead, and it'll be functioning come October when the decision gets made. Now, the exchange is foreign, getting the right price. You and I have talked about this on and off the air. We have a little bit different opinions about it. But if you have it being physically settled, which is a misnomer because you don't physically settle the
digitally
physical,
settled.
The
digital,
the virtual. But anyway, with backed, and you've got it these different custody solutions, well, you know that those are real prices. And those are in regulated markets in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So I think this is practically the deal is done. Don't go buy Bitcoin because I said that. I'm just saying, in my observations over many decades of listening to politicians and bureaucrats talk, there's a sea change in how he's talking.
Yeah.
And this is an obtuse reference because I've said it to Andy off the air, but remember, it was almost a year ago when I was listening to both the Republicans and Democrats on the Sprint T-Mobile merger, and I said the deal is done. Their lips are running with the things they have to say to act like they're being cautious about it, but the deal is done.
And the payoffs have been made.
Well, I didn't say that. I just like there wasn't. It was going forward. And we can say all the reasons why the Sprint T-Mobile merger should go forward, but that wasn't the point. The supposed opposition was like pro wrestling opposition. Mm-hmm. It was just going through the motions, taking the position it needed to take, but the deal was done. And then 8 months later, we pretty much seen the deal is done. So I'm saying now, on the record, I think the deal is done. And I would be very surprised if we don't get at least one ETF approved come October.
Yeah, I think at this point it's becoming mute because you got the grayscale Bitcoin ETF, and then you have the VanEck going to be out there, and you have the futures. I mean,
and you're going to have TD Ameritrade,
E-Trade, and Motif Investing's even doing one.
Square Cash App, but Square, it's still. Yeah. The people that want to own Bitcoin, they are going to these. It's easy. Well, the TD Ameritrade and E-Trade isn't available yet. That will be that'll be the
not
most
everybody
equivalent
has a Square
you can
app.
To an ETF.
Yeah, not everybody has a Square app. I don't have it.
Right. But you got Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay, it took me a month to find out how to get it, but yeah.
But anyway, the point is, everybody that wants Bitcoin can get Bitcoin fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like we're talking drugs.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants cannabis can get cannabis very easily. But you still need that market of everyday people that want to put in their retirement funds. They want to hold it for the long term. And the ETF is what's necessary. I don't know that that will change the pricing. You know,
I think it does. I think it becomes part of market flow. I mean, there's only so much out there.
I don't think it'll be the parabolic move that everybody hopes that they'll be rich forever.
I probably would side with that because we'd already see the move happening now. I mean, it's news is priced in.
It's six weeks away.
Yeah. However, as it starts to pick up and as people start to buy it, you know, and they go, you know, I have my grandson.
If you got a 25% return a year, you'd be like out doing almost any other thing you could do.
You know, I'm going to buy him a tenth of a Bitcoin. I mean, maybe it'll be worth $1 million when he's a kid, you know, goes to college. You could pay his college education off. So you'll get a lot of that. I think you will. And then that Bitcoin comes out of the float.
Yeah.
And that's what really is going. I think people are underestimating the float out there. I think a lot of these foreign exchanges do not have the Bitcoin that is traded on them.
You mean overestimating the float?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, I think that some
there's a lot less available Bitcoin.
There's a lot less available than is being made out there, and I think that that's part of the manipulation of the markets is they're able to, you know, ghost Bitcoin. Because if you don't take it off the exchange, it's just you're just buying prices. You know, other than maybe Coinbase, I'm sure they have every Bitcoin for everyone they you know that's traded that's actually there. But what about some of these other exchanges?
Oh, I'm sure they have a legitimate custody solution.
Yeah.
I remember when I talked to you about how Coinbase and the audience how Coinbase settles at the end of the day, and I talked about all the jump drives and the laptops that are destroyed after the daily closing every day. They're all destroyed. They even have a Faraday cage. I said a tent, but it's really a Faraday cage to prevent electromagnetic fields from penetrating the area where they're settling.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, that all has to do with insurance and meeting those regulations. One more story before we go to break, and then we'll come back with the Jerome Powell comments. Cryptocurrency insurance market is expected to grow at a faster rate if U.S. regulators provide more regulatory clarity, according to industry experts. Of course, we just had the lead story with the $125 million policy on backed Bitcoin futures. As Forbes reported on September 5th, the San Francisco-based cybersecurity agency Coalition CEO Joseph Bonnick suggested that the digital currency insurance is now worth between $200 million and $500 million in premium revenue. That's not what they're getting the coverage is.
Wow.
That's the premium. He expects the market to outpace the current 20 to 25% expansion rate of cybersecurity insurance sector. Now, but that's coming. Cybersecurity insurance is a much bigger market, so to grow at 20 or 25% is a lot bigger number than growing your $500 million at 20, 25%. And actually, I want to take a quick second to thank editor of the BradenTimes.com, Dennis Maley, that published my cybersecurity for municipalities article about a week ago. Go to BradenTimes.com if you want to see that. Anyway, Lloyd's of London, the world's leading insurance market providing specialist insurance services to enterprise, seems poised to become one of the major players in the sector following April news of Coinbase revealing insurance coverage for its hot wallet crypto holdings. So they have cold storage and hot wallets. As some of the ladies that wait outside say, get your hot wallet.
Get your hot wallet here.
Reportedly covering a $255 million limit via Lloyd's. Now, that seems $125 million sounded okay for back. $255 million for Coinbase sounds a little light.
Well, it's just their hot wallet.
Well, that's true. But that still sounds like just a percentage of the hot wallet. Well, then they got all their... They got their all own Bitcoin.
I don't know, 250. Yeah, I mean,
they got their Faraday cage.
Yeah.
Anyway, Eric Boyum, head of technology insurance brokerage of Aon, an insurance broker that purportedly occupies 50% of the crypto insurance market. So I guess it's Lloyd's 50%, Aon 50%. Said it could grow even faster. And also, Ty Sagaloff, an insurance industry veteran and founding member of the first licensed and regulated insurtech company in the U.S., Lemonade. that's a great name. Anyway, I see this market as the next cyber. I guess he meant cyber security. It will grow to a multi-billion-dollar premium market within the next 5 to 10 years. Maybe the last thing here is you can shed some light on. So Coinbase has reportedly looking to launch its captive insurance company, a captive insurance company in partnership with Aon. Such a solution was expected to allow the company to keep the money that would be normally spent on the insurance premium. Reportedly, nearly all Fortune 500 firms maintain captive insurance companies. Also, Aon will reportedly provide, everything's reportedly, this is a well-written journalistic article. Provide crime insurance coverage for institutions using, well, it's just another software solution for that, for hot and cold storage, which implements hardware security, et cetera. So are you familiar with captive insurance? It sounds like self-insurance.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. So if you have enough capital, like they used to do with the auto insurance, if you had enough capital to cover
right. Or health insurance with some of these big companies, you got to.
Yeah.
You put up the capital, and the insurance company just administers it. And okay. All right. We're going to go to a break, but then we'll come back with the Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, and how he shook up the markets this week. You're listening to The Henry Raine Show. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location.
If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to BiteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rain Show.
It's all the way up. It's all the way up. It's all the way up.
Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM in the studio, one half of the Talking Markets radio show and co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com, a.k.a. Andrew, a.k.a. Andy, even back in the day, Goldbug One.
That's right.
So, you still doing your crazy?
Not as much. I try to get an article out once a week.
That would be TradingView.
Then TradingView, yes.
So if you want to subscribe, or, you know, what is it? Do they just like, or they subscribe?
You go on the TradingView and you can like me.
Yeah, you can.
I appreciate
you can like
the likes.
Goldbug One.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot to talk about because the market's consolidating. So it's like it's doing the same thing it was yesterday. I mean, some people find stuff to write on every day on Bitcoin, and because we use daily charts.
You're very prolific on SeekingCryptos.com.
Yeah, pretty much, though, it's just to keep reminders of our followers to be disciplined and to not get caught up in the emotions of things. And that's really the focus of in risk management. I mean, that's really the focus. So,
well, so Jerome Powell took a little trip to Switzerland last week.
I would not be in Jerome Powell's shoes for anything.
He's got a lot on his mind. Right.
He has good. I wonder if he has hair left when he leaves.
Well, I wonder when he accepted this job.
Yeah, I just. What was he thinking? You know,
was there that moment when you're like, "Wow, finally, I'm at the top of the mountain. I'm the chairman of the Federal Reserve."
Got Trump nailing you every 10 minutes.
Life doesn't get any better, and it sure didn't.
It did not get any better for him.
All right, so this first one. You may get a touch of a foreign accent. That will be someone asking him about the opportunities for digital currencies, and in particular for central banks. So here he is from, I believe it was last Friday.
And also the opportunities represented by digital currency.
I don't think so, no. So I think, of course we're following very carefully the whole question of digital currencies. It's not something that we're actively considering, other central banks more than we are. And for us, it raises substantial, significant issues that we'd want to see, carefully resolved. For example, if you think about one currency that was for the United States or for, frankly, a multinational currency, it would really need to be cyber secure because, I mean, it's one thing to be able to counterfeit paper currency. It's another thing to be able to hack into a cyber currency and create.
So this is where I think he probably hasn't read all the technical research. Maybe they need to send it to him on a tweet because he's probably on Twitter a lot these days. That's true because you can look at Libra, and it's not a proof-of-work network like Bitcoin for the last 10 years has been and established itself. So it is a real concern, but he didn't inspire me that he really understands the concern. Let's continue.
With a computer, however much of it you want. So the cyber issues are quite daunting. It's also not clear to us that there's really demand for this. Consumers have plenty of payment options. They're not clamoring for this. I don't want to sound like I'm ruling it out, but I think there really are. There's another question, too, which is if people are leaving their money in a cyber currency and holding it there. They're not putting it in a bank. What happens with banks is people deposit their money and banks lend the money out. So what will happen to intermediation, the whole intermediation process? What will happen?
Well, let me help about here.
That's a decent point. I mean,
well, that the entities that hold the digital currency will be the equivalent of a bank.
I think that's where the space is going in general. We got JP Morgan coin coming out. Goldman Sachs will have its own coin. It'll be backed by dollars. I think that's the direction that the space is going.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to stick a bunch of digital dollars in your
pocket
and
you're
going to
put it in
the
safety deposit box. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you're going
yeah,
to
you're not going to have your own private wallet. You're going to put it somewhere where it's secure, and it's going to be a bank.
Yeah, and just as the banks do fractional reserve off dollars, we'll probably be doing fractional reserve off digital currency.
I think it'll be the same thing. It'll just be backed by U.S. dollar.
And you pointed out in previous shows, in a distressed economy, if you want to stimulate the economy, it's a lot easier to distribute the money directly into individuals' digital wallets than to run it through Detroit automakers or however you want to
do it. That's a waste of...
Let's see what other wisdom he has.
Everyone's just, you know, investing in this cyber currency. So I would say, look, we're in favor of financial innovation. We're following these things very carefully, but we don't see we don't see digital currencies from a central bank as something happening in the near term.
Right.
Unless you're in China.
That's almost ready.
it's like when grandma used to be cooking and she, oh, it's almost ready.
Yeah. Are we there yet? Just hold it. We'll be there in a minute.
In a minute.
All right, here's about Libra. They get asked about that at the same time. And the one thing they all seem to understand about Libra, these central bankers, is they understand the power of a central bank, and they don't want to give it up to Facebook.
That's exactly what it is.
But that part they understand. They may not understand how to do a man-in-the-middle attack on your cyber, I think you called it cyber currency.
Yeah.
But they understand power.
What is your take on the Libra, the new Facebook currency, with headquarters in Geneva?
So I want to start again by saying that, you know, we do want to see responsible financial innovation. We think that's key. We think that will enable people to be better served and drive costs out of the system. So it's important that we be open to that. I think, as I've said before about Libra, with Facebook's very large network of more than a couple billion people, a stable coin could be systemically important very quickly if it were to have,
as in, a lot of power all of a sudden.
Exactly. Wide adoption, and that's not a foregone conclusion. But because of that, we would think that Libra would need to be held to the highest standards. It could be systemically important right away, potentially. And because of that, it would have to be held to the highest regulatory and supervisory expectations. It is not obvious to see how that would happen under our current regulatory system. So it's the kind of thing where we've said this is not going to be a sprint to implementation. This is going to be a careful, thoughtful conversation about how we can do our job of protecting the public.
And it's going to be a grueling ordeal to listen to it all.
Yes.
So let's go to the phone line. I believe we might have Augie.
You do. You do.
Hi, Augie. Where are you and how are you?
Pardon me?
Where are you and how are you?
I've got a guy doing a bunch of work for me, and I'm sorry I couldn't make it today. But I did have a question, and it does go to regulation, and it does go to the Bitcoin in particular. And it sounds like people's underlying feelings are, this is where you can trust things. This is where you can go and believe in something. And the Winklevoss brothers, about a week or so ago, were talking about regulation, and they're heavily invested in Bitcoin. So they're speaking out as big investors and possible movers of that market, calling for some kind of regulation of the SEC and so forth. Am I correct about that?
They were original investors in Facebook. They put their money from Facebook into Bitcoin. They're the first Bitcoin billionaires. They control the Gemini cryptocurrency exchange. And if I had billions of dollars of Bitcoin, I'd want the regulators on my side too.
Well, that's well, that's the implication for sure, Henry. I just but I saw that and I thought, you know, and what was the one Libra that's been talked about? Everybody is leaning to find something that is regulated and dependable and something that you can push with a degree of trust. And all the element of trust that's put forward on anything you put forward as an investment is what you're doing on your show. And that's, I think, a valid approach, of course, to the idea of this kind of investment. And then the Bitcoin show as it falls back to just as Mark said, Bitcoin and on your stock, Shelby referred to the rest of the stuff as garbage. But the point is, you still have these other periphery currencies or coins out there hoping to. What are they hoping for, Henry?
Well, they're hoping
not to go to zero, which most of them will.
They're hoping that this time they'll cash out at the top instead of letting it go by, but there may not ever be that top for them. One person who is counting a lot on Bitcoin is the founder of Square and Twitter, Jack Dorsey. In fact, he actually thinks that Bitcoin will become the currency of the internet, not LibraCoin or Gemini stablecoins or Binance stablecoins. And he actually plans on using it to offer a broader range of internet services, not just financial technology, to his Square clients and customers. He was in Australia for an interview. He goes, in the long term, cryptocurrencies will help us be more and more like an internet company where we can launch a product and the whole world can use it instead of having to go from market to market to bank to bank to bank and from regulatory body to regulatory body, bypassing what Augie is saying is around what the Wikiwas twins want. Rather than focusing on money transmissions or payments, the firm will likely develop services around hardware, analytics, payroll, and lending. They've integrated Bitcoin back in 2018. The cryptocurrency generated $190 million in revenues in the first two quarters of 2019. That was a $3 million gross profit because, you know, they're just taking a percentage. They say don't take a percentage, but there's some administrative fees. Yeah. You know, it's not a percentage. It's an administrative fee. Yes.
Overhead.
And then, he recently started, I don't think it's a separate foundation, but it's sort of like a nonprofit arm of Square where he's hiring and subsidizing these Bitcoin developers to create new apps and for the good of the community, but some community gets a little more good than the other.
Yeah, that's how it is.
His Bitcoin-focused division is headed by former Google director Steve Lee and renowned Bitcoin developer Matt Corrala. So, you know, with people like that, libertarians, you have nothing to fear.
Well, you know, if the Wikiwas brothers have so much invested, and what is there an extra advantage if things become regulated the way they want it regulated?
Well, large companies want to regulate because it squeezes out the small ones.
And as Augie said, they want it regulated
That's right. Why do you think Facebook and Google, they want regulations because it squeezes out all the competition.
I would like it regulated the way I want it regulated. Yeah,
absolutely.
But for some reason, I keep missing their phone calls. Anyway, but one good thing for those that see Bitcoin as the new currency of the Internet and other things, it had a new record hash rate. And data from statistics and wallet provider blockchain on September 8th shows that the Bitcoin's hash rate has topped 94 quintillion hashes per second.
I don't even know what that means.
I think it's a million trillion.
No, but what's the hash rate? I mean, is that...
Well, and that's where it gets hung up, because some people say, there's no way a computer can be that fast. Well, it doesn't. That's not really like a computer computing things. That is generating a hash number. For everything that they use for terminology and cyber security stuff sounds like something else.
Okay.
But, I mean, so it's a key, but, you know, it's not really a key. It's like, it's a string of numbers, and maybe that unlocks it. So you can generate all these numbers. When you have a transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain, all those miners, you know, they're not figuring a complex problem. You know, you've got those like 32 or 64 long numbers with letters and numbers, which I don't know how many possibilities that are. But it just randomly generates those numbers until it gets a match. And, you know, it may take 20 million times to get a match. It may take 50 million times to get a match. It may take 10 times to get a match because it's just randomly generating. And it's like, it'd be like you standing at the ATM with somebody's card and just randomly putting in six-digit numbers. You know, you just, the hash power is just how fast it can generate those numbers. So you've got to do a lot. And the thing was, the difference is that, let me see if I can talk. The last time, let's see, the hash rate during the second half of 2018, I should have highlighted it. Oh, it was just 6 quintillion in September of 2019. So now it's 2017, yes, you're right. And now in 2019, it's 94 quintillion. So
I have one more question on this. Sitting on the billions of valued Bitcoin dollars that is Winklevoss, or buying something as simple as Canopy Growth, which I heard mentioned as a buy by your
MLM. I love Canopy Growth.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes. So what's the question?
The question is, how long do you sit on it and wait for the big spur of growth? How long do you sit on, whether it's Bitcoin or Canopy Growth, that type of wait? What kind of wait do you do there?
Well, the first half of this show was about the things that we've been waiting for, the Bitcoin ETF, the back-settled futures, all these things coming to play. Jay Clayton's, the SEC chair's, new attitude to the ETF, his new statements on it. So all that just indicates movement, but you know, we really can't answer that kind of question here before we go.
3 to 5 years, Augie. 3 to 5 years.
Then we'll all be rich?
Well, I'll be rich.
Thank you for a good show. I'm sorry I wasn't there. But
well, we'll get you next week.
We missed you.
All right.
Thanks. See you next week.
Bye. That was quick.
Yeah. And there's one more headline here. Well, not that I'm going to dive into this, but since we're hitting all the way down to the bottom to the technical stuff. The United States Department of Energy is granting nearly $200,000 to blockchain company TFA Labs to help protect the national power grid. Feeling safer now?
Yes, definitely. A whopping $200,000.
Yes. Well, if the proof of concept works, they get $1 million. And that will, so that's going to protect the power. It's going to cost more than $1 million to do the whole power grid.
I'm sure.
But if
this is just conceptual.
I'm sure that, you know, the Chinese right now are trying to overcome what they come to be.
Well,
here.
We find it good.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks to Andy for being here today. Thanks to Augie for participating from the phone. We will be back next Monday talking markets at 4:05. The Henry Show at
5:05.
Yes.
The power to hour.
On demand. SeekingCryptos.com, you can get all the old Talking Market show, and then just Google Henry Rain Show. You'll find a podcast of it somewhere. We'll be back next week.